the stance has been that the plan was for Dak to be the Cowboys' quarterback for the long haul, and that was Dak's message, too, after yesterday. Did that change, and do you see that changing in the future?
Absolutely not. You know, Dak is such a warrior, and he's been through a lot, and he's always overcome it, and this is going to be no exception. Anyone can overcome anything and beat Dak. This is something that, you know, our doctors feel good that he'll overcome and come back better than ever.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome into First Take here with my boy, Stephen A. Smith, Max Kellerman. I'm Molly Karam Rose. And fellas, I'm really excited for today's show. We have a serious lineup. The legend, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Russell Wilson, Let Russ Cook, Playoff Rondo's joining us, and T.I. can't wait to talk to him about his Falcons. He probably doesn't want to talk about it, though. All right, fellas, let's get right into it. Stephen A., you just heard Stephen Jones, COO of the Cowboys, discussing Dak, acting like his future is secure with the team. Do you believe him?
Well, no, of course I don't believe him. How could it? How could we believe him? The reality of the situation is that if you look at the Dallas Cowboys, first of all, Dak Prescott, prior to this year, made backpage news once for missing a practice. He never missed a game in his 4 years as a starting quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. And yet, you know, he was accountable. He was durable. He was reliable. And clearly, you know what, he was capable. And still in all, you still were not able to reach a long-term agreement with him. I understand the $100-plus million you offered him. I understand that you offered him over $30 million a year. I understand he was on a franchise tag that's going to pay him $31.4 million this season. If you franchise tag him again next year, it'll be at $37 million. We get all of that. But the reality is simple. When Dak Prescott was fully healthy and capable, you still were hesitant to commit to him long-term under any conditions that you did not deem ideal. So we're supposed to believe that now that we saw this man literally, I don't want to even say twist, break his ankle for crying out loud. We saw it pointing in a different direction than the rest of his body. It broke the skin. So obviously infections are capable or are potentially there. We hope that it's not surgery. Thank God was considered and deemed a success. The reality is that we don't know how well he's going to look once he gets back. Once he gets back, it's going to be a 4 to 6 month period. Once he gets back, we don't know how he's going to look. We don't know how tentative he's going to be, how reluctant he's going to be. And sometimes you don't know how that's going to affect your ability to throw the football, moving forward in the future. So if you didn't take care of him when he was 100% healthy, why the hell should we think that you're going to do that now? I think that unfortunately, again, I like Jerry Jones. I like Stephen Jones. I know that I get on the Cowboys all the time, but that's basically because I can't stand their fans. I don't have anything against the Cowboys organization. It's their fans. I can't stand their nauseating, disgusting selves. But it's all in fun. It's all love. But in all seriousness, when it comes to Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones, I really, really have a big time problem with how they have treated Dak Prescott. If this were Tony Romo, he would have had a long-term deal. It would have been done. And even though Dak Prescott wanted 4 years and they wanted him to sign the 5 years, I bet you if Tony Romo had wanted 4 years, they would have given him the 4 years. I bet you they would have capitulated to what his wishes were, because Jerry Jones has shown a penchant to have an affection for certain people. And when he has that affection for those people, he takes care of them. Maybe now that Dak Prescott is hurting out, he might sit up there and decide that I've got a lot of affection for Dak Prescott that I might not have displayed in the past. Maybe he won't. I don't know. But based on Dak Prescott's history with this organization, there's absolutely positively no reason whatsoever to believe a single solitary word that came out of Stephen Jones' mouth yesterday. Not a word.
I don't understand your logic here. I mean, you keep bringing up Tony Romo. If your point is Jerry Jones liked Tony Romo better than Dak Prescott, even though he offered Dak Prescott more money than he ever offered Romo because of inflation, it wasn't as much in its day as Romo's was in its day. Okay, fine. Let's say Jerry Jones liked Tony Romo a little more than he liked, or more than he liked Dak Prescott. Whatever. Does he? I wish someone would not like me as much as Jerry Jones doesn't appear to like Dak Prescott in your mind and offer over $100 million, which is in line with the, before the Mahomes deal, with the, well, okay, it's in line with all of the biggest contracts in football history, except for Patrick Mahomes, who he acknowledges way better than Dak Prescott, right? Otherwise, it's in line with the richest contracts in football history. Boy, that's sure a way to show someone you don't like him. He doesn't have to like Dak Prescott as much as he or feels affectionate as he did toward Tony Romo. The fact of the matter is the Cowboys knew that they were going to have to pay Dak, and they tried to, and he didn't take the money. And this is the risk you take in a full contact sport. Now, do I believe Stephen Jones when he says Dak is in their long-term plans? Yeah, I would say that if Dak makes a full recovery and he's expected to, what you're pointing out about psychological things notwithstanding, right? Will he trust it and all that? Will it be weaker somehow long term? We'll find out. But he's expected to make a full recovery and be back next season as a healthy player. Yeah, I think the Cowboys now actually get to sign that contract to a more team-friendly deal than they would have beforehand. In the long run, it maybe even works out for them because the Cowboys weren't going anywhere this year that they may not be going otherwise. Like, in other words, someone's got to win the NFC East. I think it probably will be the Cowboys because everyone else is terrible. And then once they get to the playoffs, they ain't winning any games. So that's the same with Andy Dalton or Dak Prescott or whomever. This year's a wash. But next year, I'll bet you Dak is much more amenable and his agent to signing the kind of deal the Cowboys would want them to sign. And Stephen A., if that's not a longer, as long a term deal for quite as much money, that's the risk you take by playing on a franchise tag instead of signing that deal. I don't see why they wouldn't. Like, Andy Dalton's a nice quarterback. He's a starting caliber quarterback for a lot of his career. He's considered a solid middle class franchise quarterback. And Dak already is considered something a little more than that, if not quite elite. They're going to start playing the NFC East pretty soon, more and more, and they're probably going to win some of those games. And hey, Andy Dalton looks okay, but the Cowboys know Dak is better than Andy Dalton. They realize they're going to have to pay a premium eventually. And I think now Dak and his agent probably realize we should probably sign the next $100 million deal we get offered, or whatever the multiple year deal that the Cowboys will offer is. Yeah, I believe Stephen Jones thinks that they want Dak Prescott and now also believes they're not going to have to pay through the nose quite like they were going to have to.
Well, that's what I'm talking about, not paying through the nose like they thought they were going to have to. And that's the relevancy here, Max Kellerman. Nobody wants to hear you bloviate about ignoring market value. Market value does matter. In other words, of course, $100 million is a lot of money. Of course, $30 million a year is a lot of money. We're talking about in comparison to the other quarterbacks that they would get paid. It wasn't like Dak Prescott never got offered anything. He got offered money. We understand that reality. But I hearken you back to the early 90s, the Dallas Cowboys have won a Super Bowl championship. And Jerry Jones decides, even though he had paid Michael Irvin, and even though he had paid Troy Aikman, and even though he had paid a plethora of other dudes, it was Emmitt Smith that he was deciding to play hardball with. Now, he had offered Emmitt Smith a pretty good deal, but Emmitt Smith knew that at the time, he was one of the top two running backs in all of football, plus he was a reigning defending Super Bowl champion, and he deserved his money. Ultimately, the Dallas Cowboys lose the first two games of the season with Jimmy Johnson coaching. Jimmy Johnson, post-game, throws up his hands, but not a word comes out of his mouth because he's basically saying, I need my guy, I'm frustrated, without verbalizing those words specifically. Jerry Jones ultimately signs Emmitt Smith. And if you go back, if we can go back to the archives, you will go back and you will see that press conference when Jerry Jones and Emmitt Smith is sitting next to one another. Emmitt Smith at the time was paid the highest contract for a running back in football, and he looked absolutely positively furious. Why? Why? Because he was kept waiting, and you chose him to play hardball with. That is relevant when I bring up Tony Romo, who had comparable stats to a Dak Prescott, and even with one playoff win in 9 years as a quarterback or 8 years as a quarterback, you pay him $108 million, the highest paid contract in the history of the Dallas Cowboys franchise, and the man didn't do anything compared to what a Dak Prescott does. We fast forward to last summer. We saw Jalen Smith. We saw DeMarcus Lawrence. We saw a host of other Dallas Cowboys taking care of him. You yourself were sitting right across from me, all right, in studio prior to the pandemic, and even you acknowledge
There's a whole host of people that Jerry Jones is taking care of wearing a Dallas Cowboy uniform, but not the quarterback. That's
Wait
the kind of
Hold
stuff
on.
That I'm talking
Hold
about
on.
Here.
You just said
Everything
you just
ain't just
said
about dollars and cents. It's how you handle it.
You just said a whole lot, and it's making the opposite point, I think, that you think it's making. First of all, Emmitt Smith. Dak Prescott's not the Emmitt Smith of quarterbacks.
I know exactly what
Emmitt Smith
what I'm
was
saying.
Absolutely elite. If there's no Barry Sanders, he'd have been clearly the best running back in the world. That's not Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott's not a top five quarterback.
That's not
all
that
the
point.
Numbers he's putting up, notwithstanding. And yet, they're paying him without resetting the market, which, by the way, he wasn't going to do in a world with Patrick Mahomes. They're paying him
You're going in
line
a different direction.
With the elite quarterbacks. They offered him an elite quarterback contract, which he turned down, period. If you think that Jerry
because
Jones
liked they wanted
Tony
to
Romo
hold him for
even
years.
More than Dak Prescott, fine. What's that got to do with anything?
Because they wanted to hold him for five
yes,
years.
Yes, they wanted to have.
When have you seen Jerry Jones and them do
right.
that? Right. Because you want 4 years, not five.
Actually,
we ain't gonna give it to
a,
you.
You have to be. See, when you talk about you're lying to the American people, you know full well what agents are trying to do now. They're trying to get in on increased salary cap that they project is coming up. So now a lot of agents want slightly shorter contracts so they can cash in now and recash in.
Yesterday.
Right. Okay, so since you know that, then you also know why the Dallas Cowboys wanted cost certainty going forward and why Dak's agent was pushing against that.
But I'm not talking about what they wanted.
They offered him the Carson Wentz, Jared Goff deal.
I'm not talking about what they wanted. I'm talking about what they refused to settle for when it came to their quarterbacks. There are a multitude of instances throughout Jerry Jones's history when if he had a personal affection for you, guess what? He would acquiesce to certain things. All I'm saying is that did not happen with Dak Prescott. You sent your quarterback out there on a one-year deal. On a one-year deal, you're going to bring him back on a one-year deal.
Smart.
I'm saying there are a multitude of
Smart.
Instances where we've
right,
looked
fellas,
at players that have played for Jerry
gate.
Jones.
I like
he
it.
Didn't do that.
Okay. Dak would make $37
so
million on
up,
the franchise
or else he'd be
tag
stuck with it.
Next season, and Dallas is expected
ahead,
to sign quarterback Garrett Gilbert off the Brown.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. When you're on a business trip, you know what goes completely off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups, sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or you just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up, power your buys, your tries the right way, or de-stress with a little cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. Hey, hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take pod. Have a fabulous day.
Monday Night Football, it was lit. Drew Brees and the Saints rallying from a 23 deficit to beat the Chargers in OT. Brees without his top target, Michael Thomas. But on the other side of the coin, guys, Justin Herbert, just a rookie, taking it to overtime against the future Hall of Famer, Max. So tell me this, who'd you learn more about? Was it Herbert or Brees?
Justin Herbert. Guys, he's 21 years old. The Chargers are a snake bit franchise. Like, they're vying with the Falcons, who can figure out ways to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. And they do it constantly, and they've done it for years. They're known for it, right? But this dude, Justin Herbert, has now gone toe-to-toe with Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady and Drew Brees. And yes, they've lost those games. But were you looking on the field like he didn't belong with those guys? He made those guys do everything they could to win that game. They had their hands full with the guy on the other side of the ball in Justin Herbert. And think about, and this is what I learned about him, right? When you talk about what you learned about him, I knew he could make big throws, a 64-yard pass, all this kind of stuff. We already knew that about him so far this early in his very young career. But you know what you want to see? With the game on the line, can you make the play your team absolutely has to make? And with the game on the line, he made a beautiful pass, and it was a beautiful catch, to put them into field goal position. It's not his fault the field goal kicker misses the field goal. It goes off against the uprights, right? Like, that would have won the game. And now you go to overtime, and they score against you, and now what can you do? Can you do it again? And did he come up a half yard short? Yes, he did. Is that what the defense gave him? Fine. They could have easily been in field goal position again. That could have easily, like, they missed it by a half a yard. He did it again. It's one thing to say you came through under pressure, but, you know, it could have easily gone the other way. It was lucky. But to do it again, to complete the pass, it didn't work out in their favor. But to do it again shows something. He didn't think the game was over. He didn't think he'd already done it or you know, threw up his hands. Well, that's all I got. And he's been doing this all of his very young career. He's 21 and he's making throws like this with the game on the line under pressure. Like that was, he's been extraordinary so far. And when you think about the moment on Monday Night Football against a future Hall of Famer, and by the way, they came back on you, right? Like to make the pass to even put him in field goal position to win the game outright in regulation. They came all the way back on you, and yet he led them to that position. Justin Herbert, people forget, was supposed to be the presumptive number one overall pick a couple years ago, and it didn't quite work out that way, and so he stays in school. He doesn't come out for the draft, and based on how the following season went, you went, okay, he's probably going to fall in the draft. Went a little higher, I think, at least than I anticipated, and has totally justified it. You can see, especially last night, again, why a couple seasons ago people looked and said, that guy might be a guy to tank for. People forget that already, but he's reminding everyone why people thought that about him in the first place. You know he's tall, you know he has an arm and everything. He's also now showing the kind of intangibles that you need to see from a young pro in a game situation. I've been very impressed.
All of us have been very, very impressed with Justin Herbert. But the reason why I would tell you, it's not that we're not learning anything, because what we're learning is that maybe he should have been taken ahead of Tua Tagovailoa, but we'll wait and see, because once he gets into a game, we'll see what he brings to the table. But clearly he had talent. He was, you know, we understand that. But in the end, I'm going to tell you that at this particular moment in time, Max, I'm more focused on Drew Brees than Justin Herbert. Reason why I'm not that focused on Justin Herbert is, even though I'm monitoring and watching him as a talent, in the same breath, the Chargers are playing with house money to some degree, because Tyrod Taylor got hurt early. As a result, he was thrusted into position significantly earlier than we had anticipated. I view him as playing with house money, so whoever he's going up against, particularly with minimal film to watch on him, et cetera, you know, anything that he gives us is dressing. And we'll see as the future goes on. Now, once upon a time, there was a guy that was thrusted into the spotlight by the name of Dan Marino, and we saw what kind of career that he had. So certainly the capability is there, and we look at him, and I'm impressed with the guy. He's got arm talent, which is something that I never viewed as Phillip Rivers really, really having. When it comes to Drew Brees, however, here's where I learned so much now. He's doing it without Michael Thomas. We know how reliant upon Michael Thomas Drew Brees has been for the last several years. We know what an all-world receiver Michael Thomas is. He's been out for a few games because of injury, and then he came back and ended up getting himself suspended because he punched somebody in the face in practice, according to reports, et cetera, et cetera. But you got Emmanuel Sanders, who's new to the team, Tre'Quan Smith, Jared Cook, Alvin Kamara. Kamara is an elite weapon. The other guys are good weapons. But in the end, because of Drew Brees' history of relying so much on Michael Thomas, for him to do what he's doing right now, complete 71% of his passes, 9 touchdowns, just 3 interceptions since game 1 against Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers,
He hasn't thrown for, he's completed like 68%. Then it was 80%, 78%, 77%. This dude is doing it. And so I'm looking at it from that perspective, and I'm saying Drew Brees is reminding us of his greatness and letting you know not only was it not just contingent on Michael Thomas, but it also wasn't contingent on just playing at the Superdome in front of, or the Mercedes-Benz Dome now, in front of that rabid home base. That's not the case anymore. No matter where he's going, the level of efficiency he is bringing with him, and I'm impressed by that for Drew Brees to be at this age, at this stage in his career, without his primary weapon, to be doing what he has been doing. I appreciate what I'm seeing from him, and that's why that's the name that comes to my mind for this particular question. What?
Drew Brees wasn't on the field when they tied the game. That was Taysom Hill who ran the ball in. And well, if you talk about what someone can do without certain guys, sure.
Did not play last night?
But when we talk
about, I'm talking about the game. I'm not talking about a sequence or a play.
Yeah, but that was with the game on the line. Meantime, Justin Herbert did that, those late game would-be heroics. No Keenan Allen. Like, I'm not taking anything away from Drew Brees. Drew Brees is one of the all-time greats. But I knew everything about Drew Brees I needed to know. Justin Herbert is now in three games against top 10. Like, we'll see what happens with Mahomes. I'd assume a top 10 all-time guy by the time he's done. Certainly Brady and Brees are. He's played those three guys this early in his career, and when you look at the game, it's hard to say that he was the second-best quarterback on the field. He looked like he belongs with those guys already and does it when it matters most. I learned more about Justin Herbert.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Shopping for Mother's Day is always a challenge because you wait until the last minute, but Macy's Gift Finder makes it incredibly fast and easy to find the right gift just in time for Mother's Day, whether you're shopping for your sister's first Mother's Day or your fashionista mom who loves to make a statement. Macy's Gift Finder has so many great gift ideas that you can easily pick out something special to celebrate them both. You can shop by price, anywhere from $25 and under to $100 and under. You can also sort by categories like fragrance, handbags, and more. Or gift lists, like for the mom who has everything. Pre-wrapped gifts or gifts for grandma. Find top brands like Studio Pro Model Beats headphones, Polaroid cameras, Samsung smart TVs. So what are you waiting for? Mother's Day's May 12th, and it'll be here before you know it. Macy's has the perfect gift guide to make picking something for mom easy this year. Head to Macy's.com/giftfinder today. That's Macy's.com/giftfinder. Thanks so much for listening to the pod, and have a fabulous day. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Let Russ cook. I always bring this up about our next guest, this stat. He has never received an MVP vote that is going to change this year. 19 pass TDs through five games. His Seahawks aren't beaten. Russell Wilson joining us now, and he has a new podcast out, Danger Talk. That's Wednesdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN app and social channels. Russ, so good to finally have you on the show. I know it's a bye week, so thank you for making some time.
Yeah, super grateful. You know, I think this is my first time actually being in y'all's show. So I watch y'all's show every morning at the facility, you know, so it's always fun watching y'all argue together. So I'm excited to be here today.
That's all love. We appreciate it. I want to get to the podcast later and hear what you're doing with that, but I got to get back to that stat I always talk about. So you've won nearly 70% of your games. You're one of the best quarterbacks in the league. You're a Super Bowl champion. What goes through your mind when you hear that? You've never received one single MVP vote in your career.
Listen, I think for me, I'm just grateful just to be able to play this game. But I think the reality is that every day I wake up, I wake up to try to be the best in the world at what I do, you know, and I never try to settle for second place, you know. And so the reality is I don't really want to vote, you know, I want to be able to win the whole thing, you know. And, you know, the thing is that It's really about us as a team. It's really about us trying to win a Super Bowl. And, you know, the good thing about the MVP award, you know, the reality is it's a team award, you know, because, you know, nobody's going to give an MVP to somebody who's second place or third place or anything like that. So it's really about winning. It's really about being successful as a team and what we can do together.
First of all, Russell, thank you for being on the show, man. Really proud of everything that you've done and everything that you are. Really appreciate that. Let me ask you this question. I'm watching you now complete 72.8% of your passes this season. That's your highest percentage in your NFL career. I'm thinking about the Legion of Boom back in the day. I'm thinking about Beast Mode. I'm thinking about all of those different things. This is clearly your team. It has been for the last several years, but especially now. Is this really just about the bottom line, winning football games? Or is there something a little extra special about this year since they seem to be wanting you and letting you air it out more so than you may have in the past?
Well, you know, I definitely think it's about winning football games, the first thing. I think that we got so many great receivers. We got DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, guys making plays, David Moore. We got Greg Olsen on our team now. So we're doing some special things as a team. And then obviously Chris Carson's running the rock and scoring in so many different ways. And so we want to be a high-scoring, you know, type of offense. We want to be able to score 35, 40 a game. You know, that's kind of our mentality. We want to get ahead. You know, I think there's some stat that we're, I don't know, 58 and 60 and 0 when we're leading, you know, before half. And so I think that's really what we want to be able to do is get ahead and get ahead early and stay ahead and let our defense do their thing too as well and get turnover.
Russ, I don't know if you want to let your defense do their thing. Their thing seems to be not preventing a lot of yards and points. However, there is that old saying about, like, the red zone defense. You can give up all those yards and then stiffen up in the red zone. I actually want to focus on your offense. Your red zone offense, it's like every time you're down there, you seem to score a touchdown. What is it? How have you been able and has your team been able to be so efficient in the red zone?
Well, you know, first of all, Max, I know our defense has been getting, you know, attacked in so many different ways in terms of, you know, media wise. But, you know, they came up huge in the 4th-and-1 the other night. You know, they gave me a chance to get the ball back and go down the field. And I think with our red zone offense, you know, it's about playmakers. You know, we got to have playmakers, guys that make plays. I think you got to have that kind of killer instinct down in the red zone. You know, no matter what it takes, we're trying to find touchdowns. And one of the things I always say to our guys, touchdowns only. Touchdowns only, touchdowns only, touchdowns only. And I think that we've been clutch down there in the red zone every time we've gotten down there. So I think that we got to keep that mentality up. We got a long season ahead of us, and we got to stay the course.
Russ, let me ask you this. After the bye, you play Kyler Murray and the Cards. The NFC West is ridiculous. It's arguably the toughest division in football. What worries you most? Or which team,
rather? What worries me? What worries me? Nothing worries me. I think that you know, the reality is that when I got here to NFC West in 2012, you know, every year it seems like NFC West is the best division in football. So, you know, we're used to playing great teams. Obviously, Arizona's, you know, really special. Kyler's been balling and love to see him doing his thing. You know, the Rams, they're playing great like the Rams again, like they've have in the past few years. And the 49ers, they're always tough to play too as well. So, you know, I think for us, you know, our focus, honestly, has got to be about us and how we prepare. And honestly, if anything worries me or gets me a little bit nervous, is this whole COVID thing, to be honest with you guys. I mean, this whole thing is, you know, it's bye week right now. We can't even leave. I'm normally chilling, kicking my feet up in Mexico or something right now, Stephen A. But, you know, right now I'm in the house and just getting ready for the next week.
Well, there's worse places to be, Russell, particularly considering the company you keep with that wonderful family and wonderful wife of yours. Now, let me get to this point, okay? DK Metcalf, I'm a huge, huge fan of this guy. Can you talk to us about him, your relationship with him, and more importantly, where do you put him when you think about the receivers you've had at your disposal throughout your career in Seattle?
Well, the first thing I'll say, Steve, you know, with DK, you know, he came in as a rookie last year. The kid's only 22 years old. He came in as a rookie last year. He sat in the front of the room right next to me. I mean, we took notes. He asked me all these different questions. He was professional before he walked into the building. I think a lot of that's because of his dad and him being around, you know, NFL ball playing before and stuff like that. And so he's been spectacular. I mean, we spent a lot of time this offseason together, you know, just one-on-one, you know, trying to be careful and safe as much as possible. We went down to Mexico. We spent hours upon hours just trying to perfect the little details and making sure everything was right. And if it wasn't right, we're going to run it again. And that's how that championship caliber level of focus has to be every time you step on the field. And he brings that every time. And that's what I love about him. He loves the game. He's passionate, wants to do it right. He's constantly learning. Obviously he's a freak of nature, can make every play. And he's been special for us in the clutch. I think the thing that, we think about the players that I've played with, I don't think anybody's ever played with a guy like him in terms of his size, his stature, his ability, his physical nature, you can really see him step up in some clutch games. You think about, how he played in the Patriots game against some great corners. Obviously Gilmore is one of the best in the game. He stepped up to the table. He's always ready to play. And that's the thing about him that I love about him. And he came up huge in that game the other night, So he's definitely clutch, that's for sure.
Russ, you mentioned you were defending your defense earlier, talking about a goal line stand they made it. And Bobby Wagner made a great play, and the defense held against Cam Newton and the Patriots. You guys got that win. And the presently injured Jamal Adams is obviously a prime playmaker. And once upon a time, you had a defense, the Legion of Boom, and you were like, as kind of Brady was early in his career, clutch quarterback, big on third down, steady Eddie. But the defense and the running game, when you thought of the Seahawks, you thought of the defense more. And that evolved over time to the point where over the last 4 or 5 years, maybe not in any given year, but over that time, you've been the best quarterback in football. Your name is always there. Other names change. So as Tom Brady evolved into like this all-world quarterback, so now you're MVP caliber and the team is more about you and the offense. That's where you've been and where you are. Where are you heading?
Hopefully I'm headed to a place where only few can go, I want to be the best in the world at what I do. I think for me, I wake up every morning with this desire, this passion, this focus, this understanding that it's a process. And so I think for us as a team, I think that the reality is we've got a long journey ahead of us. All I have ahead of me is this season, this next moment, staying neutral in the process, not getting too high, not getting too low. That's kind of always been my thing. But, I want to be one of the all-time greats at this game. And, I think that, in my younger years in terms of the Seahawks, it was great to have a great defense and the Legion of Boom and all that. And I think you one of the greatest experiences coming as a rookie playing against such great defensive players every day, Hall of Famers and great players, of the game. And so that was great for me, and I think that really helped prepare me for where I am today. And I think where I'm headed is, hopefully only a few people can ever go. And I think that's just kind of my mentality.
Well, you're on your way carrying the torch. Russ, before we let you roll here, I got to ask you this. So you're contending for a Super Bowl. You have a growing family. You're so philanthropic, and yet you added another project here on your to-do list, and that's your podcast. I know you wouldn't do that without an intention. Why was this important to you, and what can we expect?
Well, Danger Talk's been awesome. We've had an amazing time. Danger Talk season one, we've had Shaq at the first episode, him talking about his legacy, his experiences, his relationship with Kobe. Absolutely amazing conversation. Then next was John David Washington talking about his experiences of acting, playing ball, being the son of obviously Denzel Washington. And then we had Randy Moss talking about, being one of the all-time greats, but how Bill Belichick basically cussed him out, and him and Tom Brady, for different reasons. You guys got to hear this stuff. And then we have Chris Paul talking about the NBA bubble and the experiences and everything else and fashion and HBCUs to all the way to everything going on, racial injustice. And Candace Parker talking about being one of the best at what she does, but really her impact on women's sports. And so we're excited this week, actually, coming out. I'm actually interviewing him today. Coming out tomorrow is actually Ken Griffey Jr. and I. So nice. He's one of my favorite athletes of all time. So, the idea of Danger Talk is to really talk to some of the all-time greats of what they do, but also talk about how we can impact the world and how we can have these heavy conversations talking about, things that are going on in America, things that are going on in the world. I would love for you guys to subscribe. It's been awesome. Danger Talk has, and super exciting. It's been cool to learn from some of the greats. And I'm grateful just to be a part of the conversation in terms of what they're talking about and how they view the world.
Sounds incredible. Great access in terms of guests, obviously, and real conversation. Looking forward to checking that out. Russ, enjoy your quarantine bye the best you can at home with the family. Stay safe, and we'll see you back the following week taking on Kyler
Congrats,
Murray. It'll
bro.
Be a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Watch out
for that
All
line.
The best
it's right
to
behind you,
you
Russ.
Right?
No, man. Thank you, guys. I appreciate All you right. guys. I'll see you guys soon. Go Hawks.
Okay. Take care now.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.